From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 27th day of February 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostert. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, the president's budget proposal phases out direct payments to some farmers. Newspapers in Argentina suggest it may nationalize the commercialization of grains and oilseeds. And the International Grains Council is projecting wheat production around the globe will shrink. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly, and then we'll continue our look at the new acre program. Today, Daryl Good will compare its counter-cyclical measures to those of the traditional farm program. The Closing Mark Report, of course, is a production of WILL. It's public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
From Chicago on a Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby March wheat futures a loss of 3.5 cents at $5.10.5. May at 5.21.5 down 3.5, and July at 5.33.25 down 3.5 cents. March wheat in Kansas City at $5.52 settled down 2.25 on the afternoon. From the corn pit in Chicago, 3.50¾, a settlement price 11¼ lower. The May futures at 3.59 down 11.5 cents, and July 3.68.5 down 11¾. September corn 3.77¾, 11¾ lower. December futures down 11¼ at $3.91. March corn futures at 4.04, down 11 cents. Crude oil at $44.76 a barrel, 46 cents lower. We'll take more look at some of the other products related to corn and ethanol production in a moment. March bean futures 8.74½, 5¼ higher for the day. May futures at 8.72, 3.5 cents higher. In July, up 1¾ at $8.75. August contract 8.64½, down 2 cents. And November beans 10½ cents lower at $8.27½. March bean meal at 2.75.80, up 6.80. The May at 269.80, up 6.60. March oil 79 cents lower at 30.85. February live cattle at 82.52½, 42.5 cents lower. The Aprils were up 10 cents at 85.92½. The March feeders at 92.60, up 30, and the lean hogs $1.92½ higher today at 60.90. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil, as I said, 46 cents a barrel, higher, or rather lower, in the nearby April contract at $44.76. The May futures there at $46.89, down 58. March ethanol at $1.54, 3¼ lower. The April natural gas at $4.20, up 12 and 3 tenths. The March RBOB gasoline at $1.28 is a penny and 9 tenths lower, and the heating oil futures at $1.26, 3¼ lower. That's diesel fuel, by the way. Propane futures at 63¾, just about a tenth of a cent higher, and the gold futures at $941.50 an ounce, now trading 30 cents lower. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, 71.55, just about 27 points lower, and the U.S. dollar at 88 even is up 0.17 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like from our own weather forecaster, Mike Sola. He says tonight should be partly to mostly cloudy. Lows will range this evening from 12 in northern Illinois to 32 in the far southern parts of the state. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy skies, light snow, a few flurries, mainly in the west-central sections of Illinois and southern sections as well. Highs tomorrow will range from 25 in northwestern Illinois to 36 in the southern part of Indiana. The extended forecast says some light snow will fall in western Illinois and in the south on Saturday. Drier weather will develop in Illinois and Indiana until the end of next week, though. The extended dry conditions will allow just a few of those rivers in flood stage to return to below flood level. And the Arctic air will dominate our weather through this weekend. A moderate warming trend will spread from the southern plains toward the Midwest by early next week. More on the weather at the bottom of the hour.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Hi, this is AM 580 Agriculture Director Dave Dickey. The 2009 All-Day Ag Outlook meeting may be our best ever. Featured analysts include Glenn Ring of Glenn Ring Enterprises, ADM Chief Economist Perry Dixon, Westchester CEO Murray Wise, Bob Bastifer of First Midwest Bank, U of I Agricultural Economist Gary Schnicke, and WILL Meteorologist Ed Kieser. That's March 12th at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Full details are on our website at WILLAG.org. Thanks to these agribusinesses for helping to support this year's meeting. The Andersons, AgriGold Hybrids, ADM Investment Services, and L&M Commodities.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It is a Friday afternoon. Mike Zuzlo, Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana, is on the line with us. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Hey, Todd, will you tell Dave to take us off the agribusiness list because we don't want any more taxes, okay?
I will do that. Hey, you will be one of those important guys over at that all-day Ag Outlook meeting, too.
I don't know about that, but I don't want any more taxes, okay? Yeah. I can't take anymore. I got five children to feed.
Oh, and then I heard Glenn Ring's name in there as well, and he's our guest on Commodity Week this week, so if somebody wants to listen to what Glenn has to say before we get to that March meeting, we can do that over Commodity Week. That's a good program. We'll put it up on our website at willag.org, too. By about 6 o'clock this evening, I have an email that I'm looking at off my phone right now that tells me what the numbers are for crop insurance. These come from Gary Schnitke. I passed him, Mike, as I was making my way to the garage to drive over here from the south end of this campus to the north end. Corn, the crop insurance number should be, and these, of course, are not quite official, but they should be pretty darn close or right on the money, at $4.04, soybeans at $8.80. So those are the numbers that farmers will be working with frantically over the next 15 days or so to get their crop insurance set up. Speaking of that, have you heard what farmers are really thinking about doing?
Yeah, in fact, I just came back from two pretty good-sized meetings over in Ohio, over in northwestern Ohio, near the Wapakoneta, Lima area, Todd, and it sure seems like that what we've picked up the last half of February in that farmers are not just looking at just their cost side of the corn and beans, but they're also looking at their revenue side now, probably a little bit more. In other words, since the beans have lost to the corn so much, it sure seems like us that whether you're in western Ohio all the way over into western Illinois and into Iowa, producers are not looking at the cost side as much as they were back in January. They're starting to look at, if they have good weather, what crop is going to yield them more. And I think that that may be part of what happened in corn today in terms of a disappointing trade, because when the 86 million acres came out yesterday, the trade was wanting a little less than that, it sounded like, and some of the instant messages I got from the floor after those numbers came out was a disappointing number, that they wanted it to be lower because they're trying to build in now maybe a greater shift into more corn acres, especially in the heart of the Corn Belt, because beans have lost so much to corn, and that no bean dease corn ratio got down close to 2.0, 2.03 area.
So, hold it. The text messages were telling you that they were disappointed that that number was
not any lower than it was, because they are expecting corn acres to go up from here because of the last half of February.
All right, because of the last half of February, and so they think the corn acres will go up.
Exactly, and it makes sense from a crop insurance standpoint. Those numbers you talked about, Dr. Schnicke giving you, I ran an 80% level using 185 corn yield, 60 bushel bean yield. Those levels, you're looking at protecting about $600 of corn revenue,
right,
$425 of bean revenue. If you look at that and then you look at the gross revenue, if you actually yield 225 on corn and 65 on beans, it actually pushes you more towards corn, I think.
Okay, so but Let me go back because you've confused me a bit, and I'm not sure why. So you're telling me that the 86 million acres that disappointed them yesterday because they thought there should be fewer of them, but in the same hand you're saying that the change in the ratio is going to put more acres in the ground.
Well, what they're looking at is that baseline number we got yesterday did not factor in the last week and a half or so of trade. And so the trade really wanted it to be closer to 85.
Because, that's why I'm confused.
Exactly, because they are automatically thinking, well, in the last week and a half, we probably gained more corn acres because those beans have dropped so much.
Yeah, so and then today they turned around and said, well, okay, if you think that that's right and 86 was the number they were working with and that number's got to be bigger than 86, And they're working with what, an 87 or 87
and a half? 86 and a half to 87 is what I've been picking up here today. And Grant, I've only been in the office a couple days this week, so I haven't talked to a lot of people, but 86 and a half to 87 is what I picked up today. And, you know, you throw on top of that, there was the trade also was looking for some real, and we would include ourselves in this, we were looking for some real hardcore numbers and decisions to be made about the ethanol blend increase, and we just didn't get it. In fact, what we got was the EPA essentially saying at the Ag Forum, well, we know what the Secretary of Agriculture wants, but we're not going to look at it for months. And we know that he wants it higher in terms of a 12 or 15% blend, but we're not going to be able to get to that right away. And I think that really stunned the trade. And then you saw the Pacific Ethanol Newswire break that two of their plants, two of their 60 million gallon each plants were going to be shuttered due to poor margins. And then you see Chief Economist Glauber say, well, we're going to have about 15% of our capacity shuttered down here in ethanol this coming year. So I think you got a hit from both a supply standpoint and those acres in corn and also a demand standpoint with the ethanol.
Yeah, and also Glauber was saying, I think he talked a little bit about Verison and its bankruptcy and what Valero has done. How many plants in Verison? 15?
At least. I think
15 or 18, something like that. And,
right.
And Valero only bought 5 of them.
That's right.
Yeah. So what happens to the rest of those plants is probably really debatable at
this
point.
And, you know, we had heard 3 or 4 weeks ago, we meaning all of us in the trade, that Poet was the number one person company out there looking to get into those. I haven't heard anything for 3 weeks about Poet, quite honestly. So I think all this stuff kind of comes back around. And you know, you have the outside markets, you got a stimulus bill, you got a new government plan. Probably the biggest thing that happened this week, though, was over in China. The government came out with a new report. Midweek, they came out and said, quote, external demand is shrinking, some sectors have overcapacity, and urban unemployment is rising. Downward pressure on economic growth is increasing. There exists a big risk of deflation. I think the trade was also looking at the idea in the outside market in Wall Street that China was actually pulling us ahead in the Chinese stimulus bill. Remember us talking a few weeks ago about the Baltic Freight Index and how it was rallying because China's stimulus bill was hitting the overall market. Well, now all of a sudden China's worried about Asia and the overall deflation, and some of the numbers from Taiwan came out and other Asian countries, and you've got countries like Taiwan, Shanghai, they're down 35% to 45% in exports for the month of January. So You had a pretty disappointing week, both technically and fundamentally, and it really doesn't bode so well for the next week, I'm afraid, because there's not a lot of news we're going to get.
Yeah, it seems that this has been the marketplace, if you look at the numbers week over week, I mean, wheat only lost 4.25 cents on the week Friday to Friday this week in the nearby. Corn was up a half from last Friday week over week. Soybeans were up 12 cents. And it's not been much of an action-packed week at Chicago, but it seems to feel as if it's a turning point week, and we're still debating on which way that's turning. I think you're leaning toward the bottom side. I've had others that have leaned towards maybe we could turn this thing higher. Maybe you can explain your position a bit more.
I don't want to speak for the others, but I am guessing that they're more in the mindset that the technicals look ripe for a short covering rally. No argument here. The export demand for the corn and the beans have been phenomenal in the last 5 weeks. No argument here. I think what we're trying to look at is a forward-looking fundamental bias. Are things getting better or not? And I go back to what we've talked about in the Dow Jones. Why did we have to take out the 7,200 level in the Dow Jones, a level we have not taken out for 12 or 13 years on a closing basis? Why did we have to take that out? And I think the short answer is because fundamentals aren't getting any better. And you saw that in the jobless reports. You saw that in factory orders. You saw that in GDP. We're now talking about, you know, 5 million people out of work. They're looking at an eventual unemployment level peaking over 9% now. government last month was thinking it should top out at 9%. The financials, you know, that's probably the biggest issue on the table for everybody. We were really looking for the financials to bottom, the government to help. The government announced today that they're going to come in and buy preferred shares, convert them to common shares in Citigroup. That theoretically should have halted the downslide in the financials led by Citigroup. Citigroup's down 25% right now. So I think what we're looking at is more of a forward-looking. Is it getting any better, or is at least the deceleration in demand, the destruction in demand, is it slowing down at all? And we can't say it is, and I think you throw Asia on top of that, and it really makes us want to keep our hedges on for 09, and I think it really makes us want to keep our clients going ahead and locking in the future side of basis contracts that we recommended a couple weeks ago, because I do think there's a lot of 08 corn coming during this next tax time period.
We'll have to let you go for the day, Mike. Thanks for being with us.
Sorry, Todd. I know I ruined your dinner, but have a good weekend anyway.
Well, I'll see what I could do. Thanks, Mike.
All right, thank you.
You too. Mike Zuzalos with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated. He is out of Lafayette, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Dave Dickey's here now with the Ag News.
In agricultural news, President Barack Obama's fiscal year 2009 agriculture budget proposal increases spending for child nutrition programs while phasing out direct payments to the nation's biggest farmers, specifically those with $500,000 per year in sales. The cut, which would have to be approved by Congress, would save a total of $3.6 billion over 5 years and $9.8 billion over 10 years, reducing the $5.2 billion in direct payments by $85 million in fiscal year 2010, $480 million in 2011, $625 million in 2012, and $1.2 billion in each year between 2013 and 2019. The budget also increases unspecified reductions in payments to high-income farmers of $58 million in 2010 and lesser amounts in future years for a total of $108 million in savings over 5 years and $126 million over 10 years. Argentina's two leading papers are reporting that the government is considering a complete takeover of the commercialization of grains amid tense negotiations between farmers and the government to avoid a repeat of last year's crippling farm strikes. A plan to transfer control of all purchases and exports to the Agriculture Trade Office is under study. Farmers are reacting angrily to the speculation of a government takeover of grain trade. President Barack Obama's nomination of Gary Gensler to be chairman of the Commodity Futures Trading Commission seems assured after Senate Agriculture Chairman Tom Harkin said he would not block it, and a coalition of the CFTC's toughest critics endorsed him. At a Senate Agriculture Committee confirmation hearing, Gensler said he would impose tighter regulations on the derivatives market, but he stopped short of adopting Harkin's position that customized over-the-counter derivatives should be cleared on regulated exchanges. And the International Grains Council says that world 2009-2010 wheat output is expected to fall to 649 million metric tons, down 6% compared with 2008-2009 estimates. The anticipated fall in production in 2009-2010 is due to a 1% fall in plantings following high input costs and lower farm returns. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Mark Report and Commodity Week. Our guest this week on that program, our weekly look at agriculture and commodities, is Glenn Ring of Glenn Ring Enterprises. We'll post Commodity Week to our website just after 6 o'clock this evening. It's WILLAG.org. Now up next, the final specs for the new federal farm program called ACRE are still being worked out. Yet, University of Illinois Ag economists say enough is known about how this farm safety net program works to evaluate it against, for instance, the traditional farm programs and their counter-cyclical measures. The general consensus says the new federal farm program called ACRE is more likely to act as a safety net than the current or traditional program. This, says University of Illinois Ag economist Daryl Good, is because the counter-cyclical portion of ACRE is geared to kick in during times of very low prices.
In a case of corn, for example, we would not get counter-cyclical payments under the traditional program unless the marketing year average price dropped below $2.35. At this juncture, nobody expects that to happen in the foreseeable future. So the only part of the traditional program that looks like it will make payments, and it will, is the direct payment. That's on corn, 28 cents a bushel on your base yield.
The ACRE program bumps that countercyclical payment much higher because it's based on a rolling two-year average. The 2009 figure, while not completed yet, will be calculated off the 07 and 08 marketing year prices. And it should be pretty high, says Daryl Good.
So our two-year average price on corn is going to be about $4 times the five-year Olympic average yield is going to set a pretty high state average revenue guarantee. So the chances are better that we might fall short of that guarantee in any particular year. The two difficulties there, I think, is one, producers have to give up 20% of their direct payments in order to go to the ACRE program. So they're going to give up $4 to $5 an acre to go this way. Secondly, to receive a payment, countercyclical payment under the ACRE program, not only does the state revenue have to drop below the guaranteed level, but the farm revenue has to drop below the base revenue as well. So there's a double trigger on the ACRE program. And both of those have to be met in order for a producer to get a payment.
Good thinks there's a fair chance that even in 2009, an ACRE counter-cyclical payment might be triggered based on the state guaranteed revenue. Whether or not an individual farm might be eligible for the payment would depend on local conditions. This double trigger for the payment, says Good, makes it imperative for farms opted into the ACRE program to also be covered by crop insurance. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It's a production of the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. It is a Friday afternoon. Time to check in on the cash grain market. Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company in Ludlow, Illinois, joins us this afternoon. Hi, Bruce.
Hi there.
Had much movement of grain this week, or farmers settled back and locking the bins?
We've seen a little bit of nearby movement. Of course, taxes are due on Monday, so there's been a little bit of cash flow selling, but it is limited in extent to cash flow needs, and it's sure nearby corn. It's nothing out deferred.
And how tight is your basis?
We switched to the May today and lost a little ground. We were four under the March yesterday on corn, four under the March on soybeans, seeing some convergence on soybeans, something that I forgot what that word means.
Hey, that's new and that's good.
Yep.
Well, we got just enough time for your bids for today.
We are at 346 on corn and 868 on the soybeans.
Thanks much.
Thank you.
That's Bruce Bostard. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company. They operate 10 elevators across the central portion of the state of Illinois. And in just 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast right here on this edition of the Closing Mark Report. We'll be joined by Steve Hilberg, the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey.
On this day in agricultural history in 1841, Henry W. Longfellow published his famous poem, The Village Blacksmith. The Smith, a mighty man is he, with large and sinewy hands, and the muscles of his brawny arms are as strong as iron bands. In 1879, saccharin, an artificial sweetener, was discovered by Constantine Fahlberg and Ira Remsen at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, Maryland. They discovered saccharin while working on coal tar derivatives. Saccharin is 300 times sweeter than sugar and for years was found in products carried as toothpaste, diet soft drinks, ice cream, beauty products, and pharmaceuticals. In 1936, on this date, Ivan Petrovich Pavlov died. Pavlov's work with dogs actually started as a study of digestion. He theorized that digestion was controlled in part by sensory inputs of sight, smell, and taste. Of course, he's best known for his work on conditioned reflex, and he did more than ring a bell. He also experimented with whistles, metronomes, gunshots, and tuning forks. And in 2001, a new outbreak of foot and mouth disease swept across a cattle and sheep farm in Devon, England, raising the fear that the disease had reached mainland Europe. The outbreak of 450 cattle, 1,300 pigs, and 250 sheep vindicated an EU decision to stop all animal movement. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is Friday afternoon. Time to check in on the weather forecast. Steve Hilberg, the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center that belongs to NOAA, right here on the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign County, joins us. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the weather for the weekend. Sounds kind of chilly.
Yeah, it's going to be chilly. We had a couple days of milder weather this week, but we're in that time of year where we frequently get some very warm days followed by some much colder days, and that's going to be the case this time. Looks like the cold weather will stick us with us through the weekend and into the early part of next week, and then as another system comes out of the central and northern plains and heads eastward, we'll get into some southerly flow ahead of that, and looks like a warm-up beginning around midweek that should probably last into next weekend, but even the cool down past that low won't be real dramatic, and temperatures probably for the most part after we get past the first part of this week should be above normal for this time of year.
No, oh, that sounds pretty good. I kind of like the slip there. The cold weather will stick us for the weekend. I think that's probably right. How cold will it really get this weekend?
Well, its temperatures will probably stay in the so quite a bit below normal, but in general, over the weekend, tomorrow, we probably see highs in the low 30s, around 30 north, and then mid-30s here, and then probably low 40s to mid-40s in the south. A little bit, not much, a whole lot of change on Sunday, because we continue to get cold air plunging in here, so looking at mid-30s again, but then by Monday and Tuesday, we'll see things start gradually improve. Monday will be another cold day with highs in the, oh, probably from around 40 north to maybe 50 south, and then into the mid-40s by midweek, and even warmer than that by next weekend, probably.
That sounds awfully good. I do see tonight that we'll have in at least the northern tier of the counties in the state of Illinois down into the low teens, maybe as low as 12 degrees. So it's going to be pretty chilly out there.
Yeah, and we're still in the part of, it's still February,
right,
at least for another day. So we're still in the part of time of year where we can get pretty cold at night. So it's not that unusual, especially if skies start to clear out a bit. The coldest night will likely be tomorrow night and Sunday night. But things will be warming up, and it looks like maybe some more rain possible by next Wednesday or Thursday as this next system comes through. But all in all, it looks like a pretty tranquil week here in Illinois.
Yeah, and then rain, but then is it supposed to get drier at some point, too? Is that right? Did I read that somewhere?
There's no big system coming in after this one, it looks like. I don't think, it doesn't look like we're going to get any prolonged dry period. Last night's was pretty remarkable the amount of rain we had. We had over 2 inches of rain from parts of northern Illinois, from Kane County across to Page County into Cook, about 3/4 of an inch down in the southern and central parts of the state. But it doesn't look like we're going to get any kind of prolonged dry weather, but we'll have dry days, which will be good, and with the warm weather, should start to dry out the soil just a bit.
Thanks much for being with us.
All right, Todd.
Yep, you too. Have a good weekend. And that is Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center here at the Illinois State Water Survey, located on the University of Illinois campus in Urbana-Champaign. That's where this program, the Closing Market Report, originates. Thanks for being with us. Don't forget to visit our website at willag.org. You can find there our weekend program, Commodity Week. Our guest this week is Glenn Ring. And also learn more about our All-Day Ag Outlook meeting. I think you heard earlier in the program, and something that was pre-recorded, that it's the 12th of the month of March. It's actually the 10th, which is a Tuesday. It's all at willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason. Have a great weekend.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area.